everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Wow. Little singing musical introduction. I like it.
There you go. So, yeah. All right.
I love a good musical. You know that about me.
Yes.
I love the Broadway musical. So
you love a good musical, and a new thing I know about you. You love a good dinner theater, which I do too.
I do. I performed as a young actor in doing musicals. I did, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I did 5 dinner theater productions in total.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And were all of these in Florida, like you were talking about before?
No, we talked about it yesterday, the one in Florida. I performed at a dinner theater in about 1984, probably. Yeah. I was in the chorus of Annie Get Your Gun at the Country Dinner Playhouse in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Oh, my goodness.
Spent a few months there. It was great. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
You know, there's somebody listening right now going, I knew that was him after hearing this, because, you know, I asked you before, is that dinner theater still open? Because let's go visit. And then you said, no, unfortunately, it's shut down. But boy.
I think it lasted. The Country Dinner Playhouse in St. Petersburg was at a mall.
Yeah.
So you went into the mall, and then it was like going into a department store, but they had a big dinner theater in there. And it was around for a couple of decades because I Googled recently. I don't know why it came in my brain. And I'm like, I wonder if it's still there. Same question.
Yes.
And it looked like it shut down maybe 10 years ago or something like that.
But okay,
that means it was around through the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe the early 2000s. So it was a staple. It was there for a long time.
So that means there may not be somebody who has seen you in Annie Get Your Gun in the chorus, but there is probably definitely somebody who went to
that theater,
that dinner theater in one of those decades, right?
Oh, yeah.
That is also listening to this podcast, and they're probably going, oh yes, I love that dinner theater. So
well, we were talking about yesterday how we should come up with a Star Trek dinner theater.
Yes.
And you know, every 4 weeks or so have a new play with some Star Trek actors.
Yes.
And because there's so many theater actors that have been on Star Trek over the years.
Correct. I'd venture to say almost all. You know what I'm saying? I mean, a majority. Yeah. Yes. And they would love to do that. That would be so much fun.
Oh, yeah. The actors used to. I remember there was one convention out in the Midwest that would do a dinner theater night at the conventions. It was more like a staged reading. It wasn't a fully rehearsed, produced. But I remember I did a couple of them where it was like, it was kind of like dinner theater. I did, I think at a creation convention, we did a dinner theater night where people came, they got food at night.
Right.
And then Roxanne Dawson and I did a reading of Love Letters, the play Love Letters.
Yeah.
As the performance. And that was really fun.
And that still goes on. I think on the Star Trek cruise, I think Marina Sirtis did the Love Letters.
Did a dinner.
She
did Love Letters?
Yeah, exactly. Love Letters with somebody else. I can't remember who it was.
It's a wonderful play.
Yeah.
And it's designed to be read. Like that's how it was. It was created to be sort of read as letters. So
right. And there's others, you know, there's other plays that would work well, right?
Yeah.
For our Star Trek dinner theater idea. you know, but then that sort of piggybacks on my pipe dream of a Star Trek musical, you know, along the lines of Hamilton or whatever, right? That could be something that would be super, super cool, right?
That'd be fun.
But maybe we need to start smaller with the dinner theater and then move to the Broadway Star Trek show. Yes. There you go.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right. What are we talking about? What are we watching this week?
We are going to be watching a episode of Star Trek Voyager known as The Gift. The Gift.
The Gift.
Yes. So
let's go watch it.
Yeah, let's go watch this and we'll be right back. All right, everybody, we are back from watching The Gift.
Yes, we are. The Gift. It was a gift. It was gift of an episode.
It was. Written by Mr. Minoski, so Joe Minoski. And this is Anson Williams' second directorial endeavor with us, I think, right?
So this is This is only his second.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Real Life was the first one, right? So the second one was.
I haven't been keeping track. I remember he did multiple episodes with us, but I do know that this was really well directed. Like, in the beginning, I was watching that.
Great job.
You know, that opening shot after the ship flies by, and then we're in the Borg, we're in the cargo bay, you know, Borg regeneration pods, and it's panning across just the reveal. I was like, oh, I immediately thought it was Rick Colby.
Yes.
I was like, oh, Rick directed this.
Yeah.
And then when I saw Anson's name later, I was like, whoa, he did good. He did some cool stuff. Yeah.
Okay. I almost like Anson as much as I like you as a director. Almost. Almost. He's really good.
He's really good. And you know what's funny? Now that I'm in a position these days of hiring directors and things like that, I don't see his name floating out there. So I wonder, I feel like I'd love to get him on the podcast and hear about his experience on our show and also just to see what he's up to. Because I agree. I don't know.
The minute I saw his name, I thought, oh my gosh, why don't we reach out to Anson?
Yeah, we
I really think that he would he would love to be on it because, you know, I got along well with him. I'm sure you got along well with him as well, great, right? Man. The last time I saw him was at the at one of the Star Trek Las Vegas conventions, and he was there with his wife and daughters. Yeah, I guess you weren't there at that one. And, you know, we hugged. It was just a wonderful reunion. And he's just as amazingly nice and cool and awesome as he was back when he directed Voyager.
Yeah.
So I really think that we should reach out to him. And
that'd be great. I'd love to do that.
You know, now that you're in that position of being a producer, you do have the option to suggest names to the production company. So maybe bring Anson in to do some of some work.
I know. You know? I would love it.
Why not?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start off with our poetry synopsis.
Let's do.
Here is my haiku for The Gift. Borg versus human. Kes develops new powers. Sends us closer home. You like my dramatic delivery?
I usually don't think a haiku tends to be very, you know, very kind of calming and zen-like.
Yeah,
drama haiku. Drama haiku.
Haiku'd it because there's so much drama and arguing between Janeway and Seven in this
there
one.
There is a lot of drama.
It affected me. It did. Okay.
Here's our limerick poetry for The Gift.
Lay it on me.
Kes's gift grows stronger each day. Seven of Nine is mad and doesn't want to stay. She will not comply. Janeway has to say goodbye. Kes pushes Voyager further on its way.
Nice. See, look at that.
Look at that.
You're back. Or should I say you and Rebecca are back.
You know, I will never verify. I don't want to specify.
I think you should verify and specify. You need to give credit where credit is due, my
credit
friend.
Credit is due to Rebecca. She pulls these together with me.
She's great. Yeah. I have to say, there's a few things that have surprised me, you know, with Rebecca. Number one, her ability to pull a limerick out of thin air is quite amazing. That's number one. And initially, when we did our first slew of designs of Voyager designs for, you know, for the Delta Flyers, it was kind of like me saying, this is what I'm looking for. And let's see what you can do. And boy, she did it. I mean, which was great. She really, yes.
Look, I mean, that's.
Yeah, that's one of Rebecca's designs. Exactly.
Here we go.
There we go.
Another crew member. That's my Delta Flyers crew member.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shirt. All right. So let's start off with the episode.
Let's start talking about the episode.
Yeah. Cargo Bay. Yes. Borg. What do you call that thing that she stands in? Is that a Borg regeneration unit? There's a name for it. And I'm sitting here going, what the heck is it? I can't remember.
Regeneration Bay?
Maybe that's it. Borg Regeneration Bay. Yeah, I think.
Okay. Wait, before we even see that, though, there's a flyby of
the ship. Yes. All Borgified. Yes.
And it's Borgified. Like there's these sections that are just glowing green. So immediately you're like, oh, that's weird. They've taken over some of our ship.
It made me think of Nickelodeon and the slime, you know, on Nickelodeon.
It looked like slime.
Some radioactive green jello, whatever. But it was like, ooh, this is not the Voyager we're used to. Right?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I like it like that. I kind of like it. It's kinda it's like party lights almost. Yeah. It's like glow sticks everywhere. It's like
it was.
Okay.
Yeah. So and then we come into the cargo bay. We don't even know it's the cargo bay, really, because it looks like a Borg ship.
It does.
But we slowly come around and reveal that there's Seven of Nine asleep in her regeneration bay. Her Borg bay.
Very slow reveal, right? I mean, you're like wafting all around. You're like, and then you finally come
upon. It's a big anticipation. Yeah. And there's Jerry Ryan in her full Borg look. You're right.
Yep. Yeah.
By the way, we talked about it.
We did,
before we recorded this, that I thought Jerry went immediately into her full-time costume, but she didn't. She was in the Borg look, full Borg look, very cool design.
Yeah.
And basically Seven wakes up and she's like, get me back to my people.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be back with my people. And Jamie's like, I'm sorry, but
it's too dangerous.
It's too dangerous for my crew. I can't take you back there. Mm-mm. And you can see the beginning. Seven is really, and I thought Jerry did a great job in this episode, by the way.
Yeah.
Really powerful. And so did Kate. And so did a lot of people. We'll get into the scenes. But I thought Jerry really, you know, for being a new cast member and a brand new character that we're getting to know, you really saw this. I was very sad for her character being disconnected from the collective. And she immediately, she's like, I don't hear the voices. I don't hear my people. Get me back to my people. That's where I belong. Mm-hmm. And Jamie's like, nope. Not going to happen. Too dangerous.
I felt I felt bummed out for Seven. It was sort of like, oh my gosh, that's all she's ever known. Yeah. That was her family. The Borg were her family. And we just yanked her out of that entirely. Or Janeway did.
It was very sad.
Right? Yeah.
It was very sad to me. And this is the beginnings of it. Mm-hmm. And Seven starts getting physical and starts fighting and they have to sedate her right there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's our first scene. And then we go to sick bay and she's sedated. She's on the surgery bay or the
bio bed.
The bio bed there. Yeah. I thought this moment between the doctor and Tuvok is funny. The doctor's like, Mr. Tuvok, please, can you get her out of the surgical bay? Can you step away from the bio bed or whatever?
Yeah.
And they just have this funny, I don't know. He's basically like, give me some room here. Can you give me some room to work?
Well, yeah. And he makes that jab, that one comment. And he's like, well, that's a great comment for a security officer. And I just, I don't know what it was about this scene. It is funny, but part of me felt like the doctor was too human in a way in this whole episode. I don't know what it was, but
he
kind of bugged me. It was like, he's kind of transitioning a little bit into like, you know,
he's starting to have a lot of qualities of a human personality.
Exactly.
For sure.
Exactly.
He did
right?
For sure.
Yeah.
I wonder, by the way, and we'll continue on with the plot for a minute, but one thing that I immediately started thinking was, if this is Jennifer Lean's last episode, I just kept reading into scene after scene.
Yes. Yes.
Not the story of Kes, but the reality of Jennifer Lean's last episode.
Yeah, I totally know where you're going. I totally know where you're going.
That she was a part of with somebody.
Yes, I agree with you 1,000%. And let's talk about those specific scenes when we get
to there.
As they
come up, for sure. But I wonder if, the reason I bring it up now is, I wonder if part of Bob Picardo's more kind of human side was the fact that he was really feeling moved or thrown from his game a bit of the holodeck character.
I love that explanation.
And that he was kind of feeling more human, because Jennifer Lean in every scene was shooting some of her last scenes in the sick bay, and they'd spent so much time together. So that's,
you know, I'm going to say this right now. If Bob Picardo ever gets arrested for some heinous crime, you should be his defense attorney. You are really good at that. You defend Robert Picardo very well. And that's, yes, I agree with you. I never thought of it that way. But yes, I think that a lot of these scenes, or any scene that has Kes in it, any other person that is in that scene has been affected by the fact that this is her final episode.
Yeah, so, and it's a little bit more than just the character. It's what's going on.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and so, yes, so that, so now I'm okay with Bob's performance. Before, I was critical of it. You know, I was thinking, well, wait a minute, this is not the doctor I know, but it's clearly,
I think it's because it was,
he's affected by the fact that it's, yes,
it's Jen's last episode, and every scene was one of her last scenes. So,
and
speaking of Jennifer, so in that scene, the doctor, after Tuvok steps away and gives him some room to work, the doctor says, hey, can you get a hypo spray and give me, you know, 10 cc's or whatever he asked for. And she turns towards the doctor's office, and all of a sudden this hypo spray comes flying across the room into her hand. And she's like, wow, I just thought about it. And it, so immediately we're like, oh boy, she's got some new powers. Something's going on.
I'm sorry.
The doctor is like, even in that moment, the doctor's like, whoa, this is a big deal, but we don't have time to deal with this.
Yeah.
We'll deal with this later. So we know something's going to happen.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's, that's such a huge deal. I don't know why he even brushed that off, except for, you know, the script has to keep moving clearly. But yeah. I just think it was a cool scene, but my, you know, I always see the weird side or the comedic side. And I think it would have been funnier if, as she thinks about it, the hypo spray bounces off of Tuvok and then hits the doctor and then lands up in her hand, like sort of like a pinball ricochet thing. That's my comedic,
funny.
My comedic mind. Funny. Yeah. Nice. They would never have done that, but that's my weirdo mind thinking right now. So yeah. So then he makes that jab at Tuvok about, you know, that's a great advice from a security officer. Right. Yep. And then we move to the captain's ready room, and Chakotay is now talking to Janeway.
Yeah. Right? She's drinking coffee, by the way. I want to point out, she's Janeway and her dang coffee cup. She loves she loves her Java.
She loves her coffee.
And by the way, she's drinking her coffee and staring at the laptop, and she's staring at it very seriously. And then she has sort of a reaction. She's like looking at the laptop, and then all of a sudden she kind of goes, hmm. And I noted that when I was like, why? What just happened? Well, later on, after Chakotay comes in, she turns it around and she shows that it's the, she's done some digging.
Yes.
And she found out who Seven of Nine might have been.
Right.
She found some information on Annika Hansen.
Yes.
She's a very young girl. Her parents were basically hippies. They were kind of like, you know, pioneers. They didn't want to be a part of Starfleet. They took off in a ship and headed towards the Delta Quadrant, but they lost track of them, never heard from them again.
See, this is something that is different from my memory. My memory was that her parents were Starfleet science officers, that they were, you know, part of Starfleet in a small vessel. But now we see from this scene that they didn't like Starfleet or the Federation. They did their own. They were mavericks, and they did their own thing. They didn't even file a flight plan when they left Deep Space Four, I think, is where they were at. Right. Yep. So that's something that I didn't know about. I also feel that that photo of whatever child they used of his young Seven of Nine looks nothing like her, other than the fact that she's blonde. That's it. So, they could have improved on that. But
I think that's interesting information for the series, that this young Annika Hansen character came from a family of people that were kind of rebellious. They were, you know, loners, hippies, whatever you want to call them. They didn't care much for Starfleet.
Right.
So it does inform Seven of Nine's journey on our series, you know, that she's kind of a little bit of an outsider, much like her family history, even though she doesn't remember any of this yet and over time grows to remember some of it, but that's going to be implanted somewhere in there.
Yeah. It's a recurring theme. I can see that.
Yeah. Also Chakotay says in the scene that, you know, Seven of Nine may have been some of the first humans that the Borg ever assimilated, which is kind of cool.
That's right.
That she could be one of the original humans. That would put her in a place in the Borg collective of unique status, you know, yeah. She and her family were.
Yeah. Random thought about a simulation. If I don't say it now, I'm going to forget it. But you know how in this, we've been dealing with species 8472. So mm-hmm. that would be the 8,472nd species that they tried to assimilate, which then if you start thinking about it, oh my God, like we, as humans, we are one species. They've assimilated over 8,000 different alien groups of people, which is insanity, right? Because later, you know, we talk about species 259, what the 259th species is the one that brought the technology that happens to be all over the engineering area, right, that we're trying to get rid of. So now 8472. So they're already in the 8,000s at this point, which is kind of scary. Yeah,
that is scary. Okay, so we go back to sick bay mm-hmm. and the doctor's in the middle of this surgery on 7 of 9, and he removes that big implant that's been on the biggest part of her headgear.
But I'm gonna have to stop you for 1 second because before that happens, there's this ethical discussion, right? This discussion mm-hmm. about whether or not the removal of the implants should happen, because Seven has clearly made it very evident that she does not want to be part of this crew. She wants to go back to the collective and she doesn't want any of that stuff taken off because that's part of her, who she is as a Borg drone. Yeah. So, you know, this sort of discussion between Janeway and the doctor then results in Janeway saying, well, you know, this is my decision because I'm the captain. You know, she didn't mm-hmm. really have a decision when she was assimilated, and right now she's unconscious. So just go ahead, start with the surgery and start taking things off against, you know, the will of Seven, unfortunately.
Well, it becomes very important in this story and in the series in general, because this idea of a collective or individual will mm-hmm. becomes a huge part of this episode. Janeway's basically saying right now she's not capable of making decisions for herself. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to make them for her.
So he begins, but as at the very beginning of the surgery, she starts to go into neural shock.
She's shaking
like crazy. And the doctor says, Cass, quick, stabilize her cortex or else we're going to lose her. Cass just sort of stands there, just staring at her. But then she realizes that she can see the problem. There's a Borg implant.
She's basically an X-ray machine.
X-ray machine. She can see, right? She is a human MRI, or an Ocampan MRI. She can see right into this, into the brain, everywhere, everything is
We go into this kind of whoosh inside the brain.
Yeah, cool visual effect.
What her point of view is, which we didn't do a lot of that on our show. This is kind of an unusual and very modern
This is kind of CSI, you know.
Yeah,
in a way,
very
right?
CSI. That's exactly what I wrote. CSI shot into her.
Yeah,
and we didn't do that a lot. In fact,
rare.
Yeah, that wasn't a common thing to do generally in television or film, because that kind of computer generated images, the mm-hmm. CGI technology was not that advanced back in the 90s when we were doing this. So that was a very advanced shot.
Yeah.
Very cool and hip shot.
Yeah, which exactly.
I thought was fun. Yeah,
exactly.
But Cass has this vision and she can go in, and she not only can she see what the problem is, but she fixes it with her telepathic mind.
Yeah, she removes it and then dissolves it. She dissolves the whole thing. Like it's gone. It's
like, she's like got flying hyposprays. Now she's doing, you know, visual surgery, magic surgery.
Yes. Well, hey, let's just talk about exactly what this is. I mean, her doing this, really, without her doing this, Seven probably wouldn't have survived this surgery. So, her coming through and pulling this, out of nowhere, it just shows again how important the Kes character was and is
for all of us.
For all of us. For all Absolutely. Of us. Yeah. There's a passage of time, right?
There's a little passage of time. We're still in sick bay. Yeah. And the doc is showing everybody this eyeball.
Yeah. Look at this eyeball. He's so happy he's so proud of his eye. So see, now at this point, this is closer to the doctor that I know. Like, you know, the little smug and complacent doctor that we know, right? Mm-hmm. I felt like, okay, here's the doctor I remember. Janeway then talks to Cass. And, you know, tries to find out what's going on. Tuvok suggests that there's a series of guided meditations that would help her better understand her new capabilities.
Rebecca said this, and I agree. Why is Tuvok's answer for everything meditation? It's like, oh, God, Tuvok, I'm a little gassy today. Well, may I suggest some meditation? Everything is meditation. Yes.
Hey, that's the way
it is. We've had a whole breach on deck 7. Well, may I suggest a guided meditation?
You know what? Okay, so now where does my mind go for the Delta Flyers? I want to pitch to Tim Russ to actually do a video series of guided meditations with Tuvok.
We should do that. Yes.
And then people can actually subscribe or buy the
meditation with Tuvok,
right? I mean, hey.
Everything is every solution is a meditation. Yeah.
Therefore, it is also an opportunity.
Meditate, you'll be fine.
Yes. I love it.
That's funny.
Well, now we're still in sick bay. More passage of time. Dr. Seven and Janeway. She is now revived, and boy, she is so not happy about these changes from the doctor. And I love how they go the dermoplastic grafts, and I'm thinking, you mean duct tape?
you can see the duct tape.
Yeah, the duct tape.
It was fancy duct tape, but
it was still duct tape
on her shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah. And Seven just wants to return to the collective. That's all she wants. Take me back to my family. Right.
I love the moment where the doc was super proud, by the way. He was bragging about all the things he had done. And Janeway just gives him a look.
Like, a look shuts him up.
Lost.
Go get out of town.
And he's out.
He's gone.
The scene with Seven and Janeway, a long scene there by the biobed.
Yes.
Was just very sad to me. It was, you know, next level from what we had seen in that first scene when she first woke up and wanted to reconnect. It's just, her pain was palpable. It was really, it was really sad. And Janeway was saying, like, you know, Seven was talking about feeling connected to the collective and now feeling alone and just scared and alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Janeway is trying to say, but you can have the same connection with humans.
Right.
And in the end, Janeway's last line, when she basically is like, I'm deciding what's going to happen for you.
Yeah.
And she says, you must comply.
You must comply. She used words that Seven will understand.
Some Borg words.
Yeah, Borg words, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we go to engineering.
Yes. And Harry and B'Elanna. This is the first time we see Harry. My first time in this episode. I'm working with your future wife. And Janeway brings Seven in to assist. And of course, Harry and B'Elanna are having issues, right? Things are still blocked up.
Yeah, the warp core. Yeah.
And they're not figuring it out. Right. And I just love how Torres just sets the tone with Seven. She just right off the bat.
Gives her a little attitude.
Yeah. You're not going to mess with me, Seven. You know, I'm Torres and I am a country of my own and you do not mess with me, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, she gives it to her.
And Seven sort of.
Yeah, and Janeway says what she says afterwards.
She goes, now that the pleasantries are over, let's go to work.
But I do feel that the way Jerry played it was perfect because Jerry, as Seven, she gets the jab and she kind of like just thinks like, okay, you're someone I'm gonna be make sure that I'm not gonna mess with. Like there is that realization from Seven or Jerry Ryan playing Seven that you know Torres is not one to be messed with, which I love.
Yeah, it was a good moment. We go to Tuvok's quarters.
Is it Tuvok's quarters for sure or Kes's quarters?
It was Kes's quarters.
Okay.
It had the purple colors of Tuvok's quarters. That's
right. So I wrote Club Tuvok ? So it's still Club Tuvok, right?
Let's say it's
Club Tuvok.
Yeah, and they're working on they're using a meditation
lamp. Yeah.
Which by the way, that little lamp is based on I don't know exactly where they got that, but it looks a lot like an oil lamp from India. Because I took a trip to India and bought one there in Rishikesh, India, that looks exactly that same shape. It's a very common kind of meditative Hindu, I guess it's Hindu or Buddhist meditation for candles or oil or whatever. It's very cool. And I just, when I saw the shape, I was like, oh, I got one of those when I was over in India.
When did you, refresh my memory, when did you go to India? When was
that? I went to India 2008, 2009, something.
So this
like
is
that.
After the show was done.
Yeah.
And you went by yourself it on was a spiritual writer's, journey? Oh, it was
no,
a writer
there
thing.
Was a writer's strike.
Yeah.
And my daughter, who was a senior in high school, Taylor, had been doing yoga training her senior year. She wanted to get certified. Mm. And her teacher was taking a bunch of students to India, where he had lived for a while in an ashram and studied yoga there.
Yeah.
So they were going for 3 weeks on this trip. Mm-hmm. And I Taylor really wanted to go, and I was curious. So I went with her as sort of her chaperone. The rest of the people were adults that were traveling over there.
Yeah.
But she was the youngest by far. And so, yeah, I got to kind of tour around, do some of their yoga classes and things they were doing, but mostly just kind of went sightseeing and exploring, and it was great. It was
that's awesome. I want to go myself. Yeah,
it was amazing.
Great.
But yes, that little lamp that Kes was meditating with looks a lot like a Hindu or an Indian, and I don't know if it's Hindu or Buddhist, because in India there's both cultures are very strong,
and Muslims. There are also Muslims.
And Muslims,
there.
Yes. Mm. There's a lot of mashup of religious cultures and spiritual culture over there.
Correct.
But yeah, they're looking at this flame, and then he says, concentrate on the flame. And she goes inside the flame and sees the flame at the atomic level, which was another CSI shot.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, at first she's doing the increasing and reducing the flame, right?
Yes.
And then she seizes beyond the subatomic. And then the visual effect they show to me looked like a really cool computer screensaver at that point. It was a computer screensaver.
I thought it was like an LSD trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
An LSD trip computer screensaver. We can hybridize our we can put those together as one. And Tuvok says, hey, man, there's nothing beyond the subatomic. And Kes goes, no, there's a whole new level of reality. And I want to try to control it. So that's when she starts to control the subatomic level. And that's when the meditation lamp and even the flame starts to phase in and out. And we just see, semblances of the episode Twisted, when the ship was like, kind of like mutating and whatnot. So,
yes, and Tuvok is now concerned.
Yeah, he's concerned big time. Yep.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We go to engineering, and this is when Seven talks about the species, where they got the technology, and B'Elanna's basically like, I'm not interested in a history lesson.
Yeah.
Just go fix this. Fix your Borg crap.
Torres tells Harry and Seven to go work on the Jefferies tube. Mm-hmm. Inside the Jefferies tube, there's stuff to be done there. And of course, we flash to the Jefferies tube, where Harry walks in, followed by Seven and also a security member of the security detail that is.
He waits outside the door.
Waiting outside the door, And then Harry tries to engage Seven in small talk.
That's exactly what I wrote, the small talk.
I love the line, oh, I guess the Borg meet a lot of people, don't they? Stupid question. Like, under his breath. And we don't say a lot of stuff under our breath on this show either. No. So that was really, really rare occurrence that I say stupid question, you know, which is a funny thing. They do meet a lot of people and then assimilate them, right? Yeah, yeah. Seven then sees with her supervision, she sees a Starfleet issue communications node and realizes this is her way back home, back to her people, right? Mm-hmm. She calls Harry over to help. And this is where I don't remember this at all. So this scene shocked me when she backhanded me and, you know, just knocks me back.
Knocks
and then
you back. You fall out the door with the security guy and then she shuts on the door.
Yes. But I wrote down, this is where Harry experiences his very own PSF, pathetic Starfleet fall. So far, you know, so far we've seen Chakotay do it. We've seen Paris do it in a recent episode. And now Harry
has his
PSF. And I paused it and then slowly inched it forward, paused it to try to see if that was me doing the stunt.
I bet it was a stunt person.
It's probably a stunt double because it's a different scene, right? When she calls me in, then it cuts to the scene where she backhands me. So I think it is someone else. I think it's my stunt double doing it. But very
And
pathetic.
You don't remember doing this.
I don't remember doing that at all. I don't remember her
hitting
me at all.
I don't think it would have been you doing it because when Harry gets hit and falls backwards, he's kind of falling backwards blind. You don't see where the door, like if you were doing that fall, you couldn't see where the door is. And that would be too dangerous for them to have you do because you could have hit your head or
concussion.
So I think that would have been a stunt double doing that.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
So you don't personally have a PSF yet.
But that is a PS. True. That is my stunt double having a PSF, right? Yes. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So Robert Beltran and I both did our own PSFs.
You sure did. You really, really.
So did the ensign that was working on the bridge, that girl that.
That's Ensign PSF. Lang, remember?
Ensign Lang.
Who does her best
wiggle worm.
Who's the singer? Axl Rose does that sort of like that little worm wiggle when he sings, right? So that was anyway. All right, so we jump to it's sort of back and forth between bridge engineering and Club Tuvok. Paris, first time we hear Paris
first time
speak.
We see him. Yes.
Middle of the episode, he detects that somebody is trying to access the subspace transmitter. And Torres from engineering says Seven has erected some kind of force field. We do see in the background, both the security person and Harry are looking to try to find a way to get into that Jeffrey's tube. So Harry's clearly fine from being backhanded. He's okay.
PSFs don't hurt that much.
PSF don't hurt. They just hurt your ego. That's
they
all. You know,
totally
you just
hurt your ego.
Then Kes detects what's going on, right? Yes. From Club Tuvok. And she says, guess what?
I can handle this.
I can handle this stuff.
Kes is like, I got this with my new skills.
My new powers. Yeah. So she does. She goes all subatomic and she gets over there and she shoots that energy beam and knocks Seven unconscious and backwards, right? A little payback, right? So
it was a little confusing exactly how she did this, but I'll give it to him. Like, sure, she's got
what confused you?
Power.
What confused you?
Like, what was she doing that sent that little lightning bolt out of the thing? Like, was she affecting the subspace transmitter in some way and trying to explode it? Or I don't know, like, where did that lightning bolt come from that shoots Seven back on the ground?
No, I just assume that, okay, I assume that she, you know, she took subatomic, she turned subatomic, she turned it and she went through the bulkhead. And then when she got right in front of Seven of Nine, she was able to access a power relay that was right there and magnify that energy and shoot it towards her.
Okay.
That's what I
that
thought it was,
good.
Just a knock.
That all sounds
back.
Good.
You like that explanation?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I like it. Okay. I'll buy that.
We'll go with that. We're now in the corridor where Tuvok is debriefing Captain Janeway.
He's concerned.
So concerned. There's a partial
on multiple fronts. He's right.
And we thought the subspace message didn't get out, but a partial subspace message did get out. So we don't know if the Borg detected it. We don't know if they can track us or not. But more worrisome is the fact that Kes destabilized the Jeffrey's tube at the molecular level, which then weakened the entire deck. The entire infrastructure of that deck was compromised. Mm-hmm. And so Tuvok just says, look, Kes,
is it's just not safe for Voyager or for herself.
She can't control this stuff. Yeah. It's not safe for all of us.
Yeah.
Our ship could be destroyed with this power she's got. Yeah.
That is right.
So we may have the Borg on our tail. We don't know. The ship's falling apart. Things are not, this is not a good situation.
No.
Yeah, we go to the brig, which I always love the brig set, by the way. Where did they put the brig? Do you remember? Wasn't it over by engineering?
It was on stage 9 and it was close to engineering. And it's a great set. I love it.
It's a great set.
It looks wonderful. Not good to be in the brig, but it's a nice looking set.
It always looks good. That glowing light for some reason. Just the frames. It always looks cool. And Anson did a great job, I think, of shooting those scenes.
He did.
This is an amazing scene between Kate and Jerry. I think both did awesome work.
Really good. And the whole, you can alter our physiology, and the fact that she refers to herself as the collective, as our, as opposed to
we,
mine. Yeah. As we, you can alter our physiology, but you cannot change our nature. So the whole fox and scorpion story comes back in again. And
Chakotay is right. Like, we will betray you.
Right. And Chakotay's dead on right. What he said before. Yeah. She, and as verified by Seven, I'm going to betray you. No, if I have any chance to get back to my people, I'm going to get back to my people.
And she makes a good point. She says, and I love when Jerry sort of walked forward into the, it's a close up up front. You could see Janeway behind her. And then Seven turns and she says, so if you succeed and you bring me back to my human form, I'll be an individual, right?
Right.
And Janeway's like, yeah, you'll be a human. And she said, if I'm an individual and I then decide that I want to return, will you allow it?
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway's sort of caught there. She's stuck. And Seven basically says, you're no different than the Borg. Like, you're not going to truly let me be an individual.
She calls her a hypocrite and a manipulator, basically, right? And Janeway tried. I mean, she talked about her experience with other Borg that have been separated from the collective, who eventually through time accepted their individuality. But you're right. Seven completely catches her. She's unable to get out. And so I would say, if you ever get caught for some heinous crime, I think Seven of Nine can actually defend you.
Your defense attorney.
Right. And, well, she then yells. She's really, really upset. And she goes to this mode of screaming at Janeway that she wants to be returned back to the collective. And Janeway remains steadfast and says, no, that's not going to happen. You're going to stay on Voyager. And and so that last bit of that scene is basically Seven saying that, you're just the same as the Borg. You're no difference, right?
Yeah. Now we go to the mess hall. And there's Neelix and Kes all by themselves in the mess hall. It's kind of romantic.
With moon-ripened Ocampan champagne.
Yeah.
I love that. Moon-ripened champagne. Okay.
It sounded delicious. I got to say, this whole scene made me bittersweet and sad. I thought Ethan Phillips, this is a scene where there was definitely Jennifer Lean's last episode. This was their last scene together.
Yeah.
I know that Johnny Phillips had really gotten close as a very close friend, Jennifer Lean, and they had spent the most time together he'd spent the most time with Jennifer, maybe, as much time or more than the Doctor, but I would say, close to the most time and a romantic relationship and all kinds of things. I think they just felt like, from the beginning, those two characters had been very close and the two actors were very close. And I just saw a lot of very authentic kind of acting that wasn't about necessarily just what was happening in the
story. Yes.
But this was very much about, talking about something, remember what I said to you? To the adventure. Neelix quotes. And you could see in the delivery of that and her reaction to that, that they were talking about her next adventure after she leaves Voyager, after she leaves our show as a human, not just as a character, but you could see that there was, it was working on multiple levels.
No, oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. But very bittersweet. Cass starts to show her new powers to Neelix, and the table starts going through phase fluctuations, and he gets a little concerned when he says stop. She says no, and just her saying no throws Neelix back for a loop, and she's very concerned about that. We jump to the bridge. Harry detects this strange energy reading coming from deck two, specifically the mess hall. That's when Janeway and Tuvok go down to investigate, and they arrive to see Kes kind of fluctuating.
She's like a hologram. She's like kind of fluctuating,
or a ghost or image, a ghost, like a ghost image, right?
And she's down on her knees, and you know, she's very destabilized.
Yeah, interesting blocking though. I don't know if that was in the script or not for her to be on her knees at that point with Neelix kind of standing over her. And then when she gets back in, I would have liked to see her just collapse after that, you know, fall on the ground. Instead, she sort of bowed her head, you know, but interesting blocking.
Then we go to sickbay.
Yes. Now we're
in the doctor sickbay. Says that she has destabilized at the subatomic level and then restabilized.
A state of cellular flux. This is a tongue twister. A state of cellular flux. A state of cellular flux is what her body was going through.
Yeah.
That was the destabilization process.
Yeah.
Janeway tells Tuvok, you know, you need to enhance the structural integrity fields throughout this ship in case Kes has another incident, so we don't end up having a hull breach. So that was the last command that Janeway gives to Tuvok in that scene. There's a bit of a passage of time where Kes, again, here, this is, I think, her final scene with the doctor when, you know, she asks to stay in sickbay with him because she misses him.
She misses him.
Yeah, because she knows she's leaving. You know, not only does the character know she's leaving, but the actress knows she's leaving too. Yeah. So it's emotional on multiple fronts here.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
We go to the brig. Seven is freaking out, and it's Tarek. Tarek Ergen is basically the, you know, security officer that's watching over her. And so he calls to the bridge, but that is clearly not Tarek's voice.
No.
If I was Tarek, I'd be pissed off. I'd be like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the loop group.
The loop group did it.
That was their loop group. The people that do the crowd scenes or any additional kind of noises, group noises.
Okay. If I was Rick Berman or, you know, if I was the showrunner, I would have called the loop group and say, hey, here's Tarek Ergen's phone number. Talk to him for a minute. One of you guys imitate his voice. Like somebody could have had the ability to get somewhere close to him.
Could have just gone in and looped that for himself because it does say, Captain, this is Lieutenant Ayala down the brig.
Ensign Ayala. Don't promote him. Do not promote him before me. Okay.
Ensign Ayala. But, you know, that is the name that we've called Tarek.
Yes.
Whether he's had lines or not. I don't remember if Tarek has had a lot of lines or many.
He had a line in Basics 1 and 2 when Janeway is like, who else is a good runner here? He's like, I am. So he did have a line there. So he's spoken before. So it's not like, you know, it's not.
That was not him, though. That definitely jumped out to me, too.
Yeah. It bothered me. And I'm sure when he saw it, it probably bothered him, too.
I'm sure, too.
But Janeway arrives.
Yeah, she comes in the brig.
Yep.
And Seven wants out. Seven even says, I will kill you. Mm-hmm. When Janeway starts to come in. Janeway has a pad in her hand.
Yeah.
And she starts to come in and she says, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And you can see Janeway pause for a minute and she goes, I don't think you will. And she takes down the force field and steps inside and shows Seven on this pad a photo of herself when she was young as Annika Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that Seven is moved, but doesn't want to deal with it. And she hits it away.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's having a meltdown there. Yeah. By the way this scene ends with her sort of hitting Janeway.
We're trying to hit Janeway. Janeway sort of wrestles her from behind. And I don't know why Janeway's mouth is open the entire time. She's like, it was very awkward and
and just not believable. And just, it was a
no.
Yeah.
No. And then
it was a PSF.
I think it was, Pathetic Starfleet. Instead of pathetic Starfleet fall, that was a pathetic Starfleet fail, is what that was. It was like, what the heck?
And, pathetic Starfleet and, fight. How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, okay.
It was a pathetic Starfleet fight.
And then at the very end, when Janeway is
sort
kind
of sit down and she's
when she's trying to comfort her or hug her, I didn't believe that in a million years. I did not believe that.
I didn't believe it. Was just all
no, yeah. Too awkward. Yeah. So anyway, it could have been an ending of an amazing scene, but it didn't pan out like that. But when she did say
physicality and it just, yeah, because the staging didn't work.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have made that call in the day and just go, this isn't working. It's not like,
agreed.
It's not feeling like an emotional cap to the scene or,
right.
Or even an authentic physical fight of any kind. Yeah. It's just feeling awkward.
You know, and I'm going to play devil's advocate and just say that, and you agree with this, in television, you don't have that luxury of feature film where you can spend days on choreographing a certain fight. We just didn't have time for that, right? So I think it was just the rushed schedule and it manifested as this
it happens sometimes. Ending. Yeah, it happens sometimes. It happened with you when Seven hit your stunt double probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, they did the take. They lived with it. It happened with me on the bridge when I, you know... you just kind of rush through it. And as an actor, you trust that you know that you're faking it as an actor. You know that you're not really hitting someone or being hit. Right. So it's all pretend anyway. And you trust that they're photographing a version that looks like it's real. This one didn't for sure.
We jump to Kes's quarters and Kes basically has called for the captain because Janeway shows up.
Yes.
And Kes tells Janeway that this is her time to leave. And all of those lines, forget about those lines. All the lines that are said in this scene were basically Kate Mulgrew telling Jennifer Lean, I'm going to miss you. You know, I can't believe I can't believe production has let you go, basically, is what this entire scene was. And this was the emotional one for me. This is the one where I started getting emotional, just watching this, just knowing, you know, that this was,
Kate was very emotional and you could see Jennifer was very emotional.
Yeah. Both of them, this had nothing to do with the actual Kes or Janeway.
They were saying words that were about these characters, but their feelings and intentions in the scene that was filmed was all about saying goodbye to Jennifer.
Yeah.
And I do remember Kate talking about doing this scene, how hard it was.
Oh, of course.
Very hard for Kate to see Jennifer leave. Yeah.
How was that dinner, by the way? How was that dinner?
Which dinner? Which
one? Do you recall Kate set up like a goodbye farewell dinner for Kes?
That's right.
And I didn't make it because my brain spaced out. I completely spaced out. I completely forgot that was on the
Kate's house.
I thought it was at a restaurant or something, but I got a really, really pissed off message from Kate on my voicemail saying like, how could you forget this? And the thing was, I wasn't doing anything. I was at IKEA. I remember this specifically. I was at IKEA going, I can blow off some time. I'm in Burbank. I have nothing to do. And I completely forgot about this dinner and I completely spaced out. And to this day, I'm still mad at myself for missing that farewell dinner that Kate set up for Jennifer.
I don't remember.
You're not recalling
what
happened.
I vaguely remember it, but I couldn't tell you. I feel like maybe it was at Kate's house.
Mm, okay.
But I can't
That's
remember.
All right. That's all right.
Yeah. And it was very sad when, you know, they also go on the, Janeway goes over the comm and talks to the bridge and says, Kes is leaving us, prepare a shuttle.
Yeah. And there's reactions on everyone's faces, right? Harry's like, what? Yeah. We're a little shocked by it, right?
Yeah. I looked very stoic and sad. And I was like, wait a minute. If she says Kes is leaving, I would be like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah. You would have had a different reaction.
I feel like I should have had a different reaction.
I agree.
I feel like my reaction was more like, I'm reacting again about Jennifer Lean leaving as opposed to the reality of, wait a minute, this is out of left field, leaving where?
Yeah.
You know,
I agree. Same with Harry's reaction. I could have zhuzhed it up just a little bit.
Yeah.
But I really feel that whole scene, I'm going to rewind just a little bit, that the whole scene with Janeway and Kes in her quarters, that's the most emotion that we've seen from Janeway.
up until this point.
Yeah.
I really feel that way. And I talk about this at conventions, that there are so many scenes from season one that Janeway had to reshoot because she gave too much emotion, and the powers that be just kept kind of tamping it down and pushing it down. And thank God they didn't say reshoot this, you know, mm-hmm. and cut the tears and whatever, because I think it was important to have that in there, you know?
I agree. But Kes starts destabilizing, and they've mm-hmm. got to get this shuttle ready. And so they're moving down the hall, and
because we can't beam her. We can't beam her over. Right.
No, so can't beam her over.
Janeway's escorting her to the shuttle bay. Tuvok shows up and says, "Hey, let me help you mind meld and try to delay this transformation."
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Which he does. He helps for a little bit. Janeway does. We don't see her physically put her in the shuttle, but we understand that does happen. And now we jump to the bridge. And we have conversations with Kes, where she's inside the shuttle and she's basically turning into destabilizing into this pure
energy,
this new reality. She says, "I'm giving you guys the gift."
Yeah, and this is my gift to you.
Yeah. And I love,
suddenly we're sort of the shuttle sort of glows with light from within, and it doesn't really explode. Yeah, they definitely created something that didn't feel like an explosion.
No. Just a transitioning time.
Yeah,
right?
Even when the ship is flying through space, when it comes to a stop, you know, Paris says something like, "We're, you know, back to warp, you know, engines back to normal," or, you know, whatever that was, is stopped. Like, we're not traveling at warp. We didn't travel at warp.
Well, you were clocking the speed, and then you're like, "Well, wait a minute." You said our speed is, and I love your line. You go, you say, "We're going this speed. And then you end with, "Whoa, our speed is impossible."
Like, that's right.
That's speed.
Right. That's what it was.
Like, it's not a number. It's just a descriptive term. It's like, it's impossible, which I love that Paris calls it impossible, because it's so fast that
it's not measurable. It's not
measurable.
Warp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it though.
Yeah, it was very cool. Mm-hmm. And then when we come out of warp, we're flung 9,400 light years further, 10 years closer, and we're
10 light years. Yeah. So we're out of Borg space.
Closer, and we're out of Borg space. So, so the other jeopardy of still being in Borg space is over. She's given us this gift of safety and helping us get home.
Yeah, we're 10, we're 1/10, we're more than 1/10, because if you say it's 70 years to get back home, and she's shaved off 10 years out of the 70. That's more than 10% of the way. So that's good. We're happy about that. Now we jump to cargo bay,
and we finally reveal the cat suit,
the silver Olympic speed skating suit that she's wearing, minus the hoodie. And she's standing there like striking a pose. You know, she's got that little pose going on.
And it's funny. I like the fact that it wasn't like completely gratuitous, you know, body shots or whatever. Right. It felt, you know, it was a nice wide reveal of the cat suit, but the doctor explains. He says, I took the liberty of stimulating some of your hair follicles, a vicarious experience for me, as you can imagine," which I love that line. Why she needs hair, I don't know.
Did he write that? Did he?
Interesting.
I don't know. Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, and then she tells Janeway that her favorite color was red.
Yeah. She says red. And Janeway goes, "What?" She says red, the child you spoke of, her favorite color was red.
Yeah. And it feels a little too tight, you know, that loose end was tied up too quickly. All that tension with Janeway. And then now at the end, she's like, "Well, I've got my new suit on. I've got my new hair, and I'm not going to rebel and try to get away ever again. I'm done."
I don't know. I feel like Janeway's, Kate's performance was very cautious. Mm-hmm. I feel like this little, you know, gesture of, I can remember something maybe of that little girl, but only a vague connection there.
Right.
At this point.
Okay.
And then we go to Tuvok's window of his quarters, and he's lighting
the meditation lamp. Yeah. We're back at Club Tuvok, and the very final scene of this episode is really Tuvok remembering or thinking of Kes.
And we pull back away from his window. We see the whole ship. We see Voyager. We see space. We just keep pulling back into this kind of infinite space and this pure energy that Kes is everywhere.
Yes.
That's what I got from that last moment.
Agreed. Exactly.
Yeah.
No.
We didn't do that kind of shot very often where you sort of are outside of the ship and pull back, you know, seeing a perspective from the outside looking in. We didn't do that very often. I thought it was super cool. I wish we did it more.
Yeah, the only time I can think of is from the shoot where Harry kind of realizes that they're not underground and it pulls back from that little window and he's on that space station prison, right? So not a common choice by the production staff. So it was bittersweet, really, the whole episode, right?
Yep. Just agreed.
Just emotional, sad.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What was your theme? Did you have a theme for this one? I had a theme. I'll give it to
you. You start.
The lesson that I learned was basically once you're connected, that you'll always have that connection somewhere deep inside of you, no matter how far apart you might be. Mm-hmm. So once you're connected to someone or something like the Borg, that the Borg will always be part of Seven. And once we're connected to Kes, that she becomes this pure energy, that we're always connected. Something about that idea for me was the lesson here of feeling connected, feeling the presence of your past, you know, whether it's Annika and Seven and that past, whether it's the Borg still being very much a part of Seven, whether it's Kes being very much a part of all of the crew. I think that was the idea that landed for me.
Okay. I like that. That's a very, you're pulling back, sort of like that final shot. You pull back and saw the overall lesson. Yeah. I think for me, my lesson is sometimes you're put into a situation where you're not happy with it and you are fighting it tooth and nail and fighting it and you're getting nowhere from fighting it. And so at some point, hopefully sooner than later, one will come to the realization that one must go with the flow, no matter what horrible situation or unsatisfactory situation you're thrown in. You kind of have to go with the flow. You have to accept that situation and let the universe unfold and let the situation take care of itself by putting it on autopilot and not trying to force it. You know, don't force that square peg into that round hole, which kind of was what was happening with Jerry, you know, with Seven. Seven is fighting and fighting and fighting and realizing I still want to be part of the collective and this is the way it should be. And really Janeway's not going to let that happen. And so the moment she accepted it and realized, okay, I need to just go with this. Let's just see where this takes me, you know, release the tension by releasing your preconceived thoughts and just letting things happen. Right. So that's the lesson I kind of found.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Very good. Okay. Well, that was fun. Here we go. Season four.
Woo. We're moving. Yes. We're chugging along. Are. Right. I mean, we're already in the second episode of season four. We're heading towards the midway point of Star Trek Voyager. Mm-hmm. And So next episode, next week, guys, join us when Robbie and I talk about Day of Honor. Day of Honor. This is a big Klingon / Torres episode. So I can't wait to review that.
I think there's a little Paris in there, too.
I'm sure there is.
I think there is. All right. That'll be fun. I'm excited.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.